Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Declaration of Free Will, a podcast where you, the listener, will enjoy discussions about everything that has to do with bicycles and bicycle culture. Join us for some irreverent discussions and industry gossip with behind-the-scenes stories where we poke fun at some of the ridiculousness of the bicycle industry by cyclists with the inside scoop. So grab a seat and join us in the endless love, passion, and celebration of this two-wheeled, human-powered freedom machine called the bicycle.
On today's episode of Declaration of Free Will, we will be talking to my sister, who is the NCNCA state champion for both individual and team time trialing. So that'll be pretty fun. We've got a lot of stuff to talk to her about. We also have the regular segments, Just the Tip and R&R, otherwise known as Ron's Rant. So stay tuned. Now for a segment we like to call Just the Tip. Hey everybody, thanks for joining. Today's tip is going to be a quick one. It's going to be for the cyclist that hasn't quite committed to a tubeless tire and rim system yet. I'm not going to teach you how to convert to a tubeless system yet. This is for a regular tube and tire system, but we're going to use talcum powder on the inside of the tire when we change our tube. So you're going to change your tube like you would normally do. Depending on the tire that you're using, you're going to need at least two tire levers. You're going to hook the tire levers inside of a deflated tire, hook that bead, and pull it over the rim like you would normally do. You might need to do this again while holding that one in place, and then slide the second one around the rim to dislodge the tire from the rim. Once that happens, you're going to pull the old tube out, even though it might not be flat. You're still going to want to pull it out of the tire all the way. Once it's out of the tire, you want to sprinkle a little bit of talcum powder in your hand, a small pile, and you want to rub it all over the tube. After you do that, set the tube aside, and then you're going to take the tire off of the rim completely. You're going to pour a little pile of talcum powder at the bottom end, say 6 o'clock, on a tire that you're holding. And you're going to rotate the tire in your hands like it's rolling on the bike and spread the talcum powder evenly on the inside of the casing. Once it's on the inside of the casing, we're going to mount the one side of the tire back to the rim. After that, we're going to semi-inflate that tube again. We're going to stick the valve end through the hole in the rim. Attach your Prestavalve stem, holder, nut, thing, or Schrader valve. Just put it through the hole. Once it's through the hole, you're going to put the tube inside of the tire and push the other bead, the last bead, start putting it back inside the tire. Use your tire levers to get through the last part of it so it's mounted properly. And that's it. Inflate the tire, and you've got a little buffer between the tire and the tube on the inside that's going to help that tube slip in the case of a pinch flat, as opposed to getting stuck between your rim and your tire when you hit a sharp object. It helps a lot. It's an old downhill trick from a long time ago. I've been doing it for 20 years, and I can't tell you if it's helped me or not, but I don't get any pinch flats. Anyways, that's it. That was the tip for today. I hope that helped. Join me next time for another Just the Tip. Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining me for the very first episode of Declaration of Free Will. Today's episode is going to be an interview with my sister, Christy Frizzell, who is the Southern California Nevada state champion in both team time trialing and the individual time trial. And we're going to get started right now. So how are you doing?
Pretty good.
How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Thanks for coming. All right. You're a member of a cycling club, yeah?
Yeah. Canyon Billow.
Do you want to say anything about them?
Yeah, it's over in Yorba Linda, Anaheim, and you know, we have various rides. It's a great club. 150 people, honestly, only 50 of them really ride. All different levels. And
is that straight? Is that normal for a club? Only 50 people riding?
Well, we have a lot of people that have moved away and just kind of, it's been, you know, it's been around for 30 years. So.
Oh, wow. That seems like a long time.
Yeah.
What are some of the best things about being in a club like that?
I like having the variety of rides and the variety of levels. I like being around, we're definitely no shortage of talent. So I learned a lot riding with these guys and, it's a great camaraderie. We have a lot of fun. There's a lot of stories being around for 30 years. A lot of these guys have been riding for the whole entire time. And, there's a lot of fun stories and it's a great time. It really is. It's a lot of fun.
What would you say were some of the worst things about being in that club or in a club, not necessarily that club?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're all wearing the same jersey, so you kind of have to be either an ambassador.
I thought you were going
to
say that's the worst part. Oh, we all look alike, which is weird. So like our mom's dresses in the morning.
Well, that too. No, you just never know how somebody's going to be with other cyclists. You know, I'm not really one to look down on people just because they don't ride on certain levels. And, you know, I really honestly think that we're all there's a lot of good people in that club though. Not a whole lot of tools like in some of the other clubs.
Right.
Yeah.
Although there are some.
I'm sure there's a few.
I've witnessed a few.
Fine. Well, obviously you kind of already knew the answer to this question before you asked it. So there you go.
So how long have you been riding?
I started on a tandem for about 3 or 4 years, and I've been riding on my single for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. So 7 to 8 years, maybe.
What would you consider your key motivation to switching your life to a cyclist lifestyle? Because it is a switch. It is a lifestyle. Riding a bike, the amount of miles you ride a bike is a lifestyle change.
Yeah.
What was your main motivation for that?
Well, I think I was drawn to the subculture of cycling, to be honest with you. The intelligence and kind of its own language and its exclusivity in the world and kind of how it brings a lot of people from different walks of the earth together, just being on a bike. So I think that's what drew me to it the most.
When you say exclusivity, you mean like in a negative way?
No, I mean in a really positive way because we're doing something good for the earth. We're doing, you know, it's like seeing people on bikes like, oh, you ride a bike? Like, it automatically bonds you. It's just great.
Yeah, it is.
It's a great sport.
It is a great sport. Do you find that in Southern California, do you find it like I do, that that there seems to be kind of a polarized opinion of cyclists? Like, you either are okay with them or you're not okay with them. There doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground, especially when it comes to sharing the road.
I think, honestly, a predominant amount of people that I come in contact with, there's a lot of ignorance. I think people in cars, they misjudge the speeds that we're going. They misjudge that we can't stop like a car can, or even like a motorcycle can for that matter. I think that they don't realize really how vulnerable we are. I don't think they realize, you know, the 3 feet isn't nearly enough.
When you say 3 feet, for people that don't know, in California, we have a 3-foot law. I don't know if that's a federal law. It might be. But here in California, motorists are required to pass cyclists with or without a shoulder and with or without a bike lane with at least 3 feet.
Yeah. And I don't think they realize that we can actually take the lane too.
Right.
That's our law.
Right.
Just as much as it is motorists, and that we can get a ticket just like a car can. You know,
yeah.
And I do kind of look down on bikes or cyclists that run red lights.
Sure.
And go against the law and don't really treat themselves like a car would and then expect to be treated well.
Right.
I mean, we're ambassadors out there. We should probably follow the rules of the road.
Right.
If we want to be treated well.
Right. Well, we should be treated well regardless.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
And everybody should be. But that's kind of a subject for another podcast. So
totally.
Let's move on and let's go to... Let's talk about some of your accomplishments, because that's really what I wanted to talk about and bring you on today was for your accomplishments. You've done a lot in the short amount of time that you've been riding a bike, more than I have, and I've been riding my bike a long time. So let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, I love riding, so I kind of have gotten my feet wet in a couple different venues as far as I got the Triple Crown and the the 2016 Triple Crown, which was three epic 200-mile rides, which really was amazing, an amazing experience, good and bad. And then got into time trialing a little bit. And
what got you into that? What got you into time trialing?
There's some time trialists in my club that just thought I would be really good at it. And
we always need another excuse to buy another bike.
Taught me that's right. That is so true. And I love that bike, actually. It's really fun to have speed and free speed at that. It's just a great...
Well, explain that, because we talked about that the other day at coffee.
Yeah.
Let's talk about free speed. Like, what do you mean by that?
I mean that whereas, on your road bike on any given day, maybe you're going 18 to 20 miles an hour, and it feels like 18 to 20 miles an hour, right? Well, on a time trial bike, that 18 to 20 miles an hour, you're actually going 23, 24 miles an hour. So you get a couple miles extra.
Just from being aerodynamic.
Yeah, just from being aero. It's great. It's fun. There's a lot of fun to it.
So you did the three double centuries.
Yeah.
And then what were some of your other...
And then I just kind of played around with some time trialing. And then that's when I went into the state race. And I was completely floored that I won. It was kind of funny because even after the race was over... and I told the guys that I passed all my contestants, they were convinced I won. And I was seriously convinced that something went wrong. Like, right. I don't know how that just happened.
Like, it was too easy. I must have done something wrong. Like, I cut the course or
right.
I had jetpacks right. or you were mechanically doping.
Did I draft at all? No, there was no one around me. Right. So I don't even
know.
Because
you're in the front. Yeah. You got drafted in the front. Yeah.
It was just really lame, but it was fun. It was like, it was just the perfect storm. Everything went right that day for me. And it was a great first experience at the States. So.
Perfect. So to prep for that, do you ride a certain amount of miles every week? Or like, what is your average miles per week that you ride?
I ride roughly between, I don't know, like 150 to 200 miles a week. So that the miles definitely go into it. But I find that the best training for time trialing is a combination of climbing and speed. So you need
to climb. Speed, I'm sorry to interrupt. When you say speed, you mean like climbing and then maybe going flat, like sprint intervals, that kind of strength training? Or is that more strength training and not as much speed? Are you talking about just flat out hauling ass to a destination for 40 miles?
Yeah. Like I'm talking about hauling ass as much as you can for actually like 50 to 60 miles. And we combine that on a weekend with some climbing, like doing Baldy or, you know, whatever. I mean, there's climbing in all different ways. So right. Mountain biking is great training for time trialing, I think. Because you're always working. There's right. always, you have to climb.
Right.
So I think that.
It's called mountain biking. Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I guess, right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Because that's, mm-hmm. there's climbing.
Mountain biking. Right. But I've mountain biked on some flat.
No, I wasn't saying you got it wrong. I'm just saying some people don't like to climb but like to mountain bike. It's like, well, it's kind of in the name
yeah.
of the sport.
Right. So that's what I feel like prepares me for the time trialing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Let's talk about the state championship a little bit. What category did you race in?
I raced in Cat 4. There's four different categories for the women as far as numbers. There's a 1, 2, which are the pros, the 3, and then the 4s, and then there's age group. And I could have raced in my age group, but I actually wanted to race in Cat 4. Just kind of, I didn't really expect to win. I surprised myself. So that's kind of where a new racer would ride. Whereas actually in the men, there's Cat 5.
Okay.
So, but because we're smaller in numbers.
So what was the reason that you chose to ride? Just because it was
maybe going to be a little bit more challenging.
Right. More challenging.
I thought
and that's
I could have
your
my
MO
have some
anyways.
Younger blood in there. Yeah.
Right. Did you feel like you beat anybody that put a feather in your cap that day?
Yeah, actually I was shocked that I was the first out of three people to get under three women to get under an hour. So I actually beat the Cat 3 racer.
Oh, that's
and
impressive.
Yeah. And then a couple of other seasoned state champs were in my category and I beat them. So I just had a great day. I don't know if I'll ever be able to do that again, but it was a great day. So
you got third overall for the whole day.
Mm-hmm. Over the women.
Nice.
The women, yeah.
Cool. All right. Let's talk about kind of your riding habits. What's your favorite weekly ride that you do?
It varies. I mean, I love riding my bike. I like our Thursday rides a lot. And we have a lot of fun.
Right.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, she slums it with me on Thursdays with her and her friend Paul. Yeah, no, we're laughing about it, but it's a full blown slum. It's like, oh, look, he's in sandals and he's riding flat pedals, and oh, look, we're going slower than I think I can go backwards faster than we're going right now. So yeah, her and Paul is also a very strong rider. Come down and slum it with me on Thursdays. We pick a ride. One of us becomes the ride master for the week, and we pick the ride and we pick the pace of the ride, and
we have a lot of fun.
We do have a lot of laughing, a lot of stopping. With me, there's a lot of eating and drinking, coffee and other sort of beverages. You know, she's constantly being asked if she's a pro by guys that think she's just pretty, even though she is fast, but they don't know that because they didn't see her rides. They're just, she's all kitted out and looks like she's a pro. So they're all, oh, are you a pro? Anyways.
God,
so,
I love that, though.
That is a... I know you do.
That's a huge compliment.
It is a huge compliment.
Even though...
Plus, you're a attention whore, so...
Wow.
I'm just kidding. It runs in the family. That's your favorite ride?
Probably one of my favorites.
Okay,
I don't really have a fucking favorite, okay?
You can cuss her.
Can I say that? Okay.
This isn't a podcast for fifth grade.
I just like to ride my bike. So all different rides. I mean,
they're all
the
your
one
favorite.
Thing I freaking love about cycling is no two rides are ever the same.
Right. They're like snowflakes.
They are. And you know what? That's what I love about it. You never know what you're going to get.
Right. You can stick your tongue out and eat it if you want. Okay. let's talk about what your hardest ride.
Like my least favorite.
Yeah. I guess would you equate hardest with the least favorite? For someone who likes to suffer so much, I didn't think that would be
no,
the case.
No, I wouldn't, but I don't like pain, like foot pain, things like that. Pain that shouldn't, you know, I like to be as comfortable as possible on the bike.
Well, if you're having foot pain, you got another problem going on other
yeah,
than the ride.
Yeah, when you do a double century.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Oh, you're talking about double century. I'm talking about your weekly rides.
Oh, my least favorite weekly ride. I don't really, I'm sorry.
Yo, I'm sorry, Ron.
I like
it's actually my favorite and my least favorite are the rides I do with you.
No, God.
Okay.
I like them all.
Okay, what would you say was your hardest ride ever in the history of your life?
The solving.
Besides that one time when I got you a bike and you were going to do triathlons.
That was a long time ago, and I did do triathlons, by the way.
We were riding with your friend, and we were in front, you were away, and you were so sad. Oh, God, you guys, wait for me. But you had never ridden a bike before.
No.
And that bike was way too big for you.
It was huge.
Anyways, go ahead. Hardest ride.
Solving double.
Did you cry?
I came very close to crying. Just being in Fox and Canyon at 9:30 at night.
What were some of the reasons you didn't like it? That it was the hardest.
It rained for 10 hours straight. It took us a little less than 17 hours to finish. We would have been disqualified if it had gone over 17 hours, which means I would have had to do another double.
You can get the triple crown.
Yeah. And our batteries ran out at mile 175. So we did basically 25 miles in the pitch black in the rain. It was insanity. I was scared. I was wet. I was cold. I was
road
tired.
Conditions.
Not good in solving. Like just gravel.
Wet,
basically.
Slippery gravel, potholes.
Yeah.
Traffic.
Hardly any traffic. Had there been more traffic, I probably wouldn't have. Once we got into the last 10 miles and it was actually traffic, at least we had light.
Right.
We had no light. We were in the middle of Fox and Canyon in the middle of the evening, pouring down rain. You're just wondering if a fox is going to run out or a raccoon or whatever.
Some kind of varmint.
Yeah. So I was scared. It was not good. It was a bad ride. It was scary.
Did anybody complain to the ride organizers?
No, because it was our own damn fault. You know, you take a bunch of roadies, you put them in a double. You know, that's why these double guys carry backpacks with battery packs on them.
Right. They're prepared.
Totally prepared and they're ready.
You're riding with Boy Scouts, basically.
And we just thought we were going to lick it again in 11 hours. And, you know, when you're cocky, you pay.
When you're cocky, you get your ass handed to you.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Right.
So you really had only yourself to blame.
Right. So let's talk about your gear.
Okay.
What are some of the favorite components you have on your bikes?
Well, all of my bikes have two wheels, so that's a great component.
Well, it's in the name. It's not called a tricycle.
Bicycle.
It's called a bicycle.
So I do like the DI2. I'm sorry, but the electronic shifting is a great thing.
That's state of the art.
It's very nice. My time trial bike.
It's also DI2, right?
Uh-huh.
What do you like about the DI2? I've never used it. I'm just curious.
It kind of takes the thought out of everything.
Right.
So, when you hold it down, say you're coming up to a pretty steep climb, hold it down, it'll go immediately to the smallest gear. Mm-hmm. It's really, really smooth.
Super light, probably.
It's super light. It's just really nice.
What would be, out of the three bikes you have, which you do have three bikes, you have a mountain bike, a road bike, and a tri bike, what would you say is your favorite bike? And why is it your favorite bike?
I would have to say my road bike. I think I'm just attached to it. It's gone through a lot with me. I've graded it little by little and just was my first bike, my first real bike. And I just really love it.
That's it?
It's fast. It's light. It's comfortable.
Is it sexy?
It is pretty sexy, actually.
Do aesthetics take aesthetics into account when you look at your bikes and which one you like more than the other?
I like all my bikes aesthetically.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aesthetics are a big thing.
They are a big thing.
I know.
Oh, okay.
You know, I like a small tube steel bike. Mm-hmm. I think it looks, but I'm nostalgic. I'm nostalgic down to a flaw. So.
Right. Somebody needs to interview you then, huh?
Yeah. Maybe I should just interview myself.
You should interview yourself.
Hey, Ron, it's Ron. How you doing?
I have a question for you.
All right. I was going to do a pop quiz for you, but...
Why aren't we going to do that?
Because we already talked about your components, and I don't want to put you on the spot. She's a strong rider. Doesn't know a whole lot about components.
I'm learning.
But she is learning.
I am learning bike mechanics.
And she's a willing participant in the teaching. So
I want to learn.
I know you do. It's important that you know. It's important you know how your bike works and how it goes together and how it can possibly come apart on you. All right. Let's say you're watching the news and Trump comes on and he says,
"That's when I turn off the news."
So. Yeah, me too. But let's say you have to watch it because he somehow forced us into watching him talk. And he says, "All right, from now on, we're only going to be a two bike household."
Is
in,
it
in
like
America.
A 42, like 40 guns and two bikes type thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That sounds like Trump.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So you can only have two bikes.
Okay.
Which two bikes would you take?
My mountain bike and my road bike.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I asked that question.
I know.
What are you going to do?
Well,
keep a tri bike?
What
are you
going to
do? Have a road bike and a tri bike? Then we'll never talk. That's weird.
I would have a hard time getting rid of the
You don't have a choice.
Trump's
at the door. Trump's at the door. He's knocking.
But I wouldn't get rid of my mountain bike.
All right. Good. Speaking of your mountain bike, what is your favorite local dirt trail and why?
Well, I would say the Fullerton Loop, definitely, just because that's where you taught me how to ride a mountain bike, and I know it, and it's just fun. But Paul and I went up the Turtle Ridge in Shady Canyon, and that was a great trail. Switchbacks, great climbing. It was really, really fun.
Is that the one
really
that
fun.
We did?
You haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I did.
No, this is a different one. You haven't done it. This is our first time ever doing it.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Take it down a notch, man.
All right. Well, don't argue
with me. It's exactly the same name as the other run we did.
No, it's not.
Oh, God, your face. Wish you guys could see your face right now. All right. So 1 to 10, 1 being like Elmo from Sesame Street.
Aw.
And then 10 being like, what's his name?
Peter
the karate
Scott.
Guy. Who?
Oh, Bruce Lee?
No.
Oh.
He's a badass too, but... Chuck Norris.
Oh, okay.
1 being Elmo, 10 being Chuck Norris.
Okay.
How badass are you on a scale from 1 to 10, those being the parameters?
I don't know. It's like,
yes, you do. Just
based
say it.
On any
say it
given
out loud.
Day, I could be an 8, and then on some days I can be a 3. So I don't even know. Yeah.
That's a big swing.
Yeah. Well, it happens. Sometimes I'm a giant pussy.
Whoa. Well, you know, maybe you should try to work on just being steadily mediocre like I am. I'm literally from like hover between 4 and 6.
Right.
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 I mean, there's some things I'm a 10, but 4 to 6 mostly.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Okay. All right.
So what's next for you? Where are you going as a cyclist? And what's next for you on the bike? Are you going to buy a new bike? Are we going to get you on some steel eventually? What's happening?
Maybe eventually. But right now I'm going to finish out the year I'm doing the Southern California Time Trial Series. I want to do another state race.
Do you need to plug that? Are those local races or?
Not really. They're both 100 miles apart. So, yeah. One's Fiesta Island and then the other one's Piru up in Los Angeles. Okay. So that's what I'm going to do this year. But I don't know. I mean, I'd like to do a little bit more travel with the bike. I'd like to go through Sonoma County. I'd like to go up the one a little bit. I want to see one of the most epic rides I could actually say is seeing Joshua Tree for 200 miles from sunup to sundown. And I really want to experience more of that, more seeing just different scenery. I mean, we have so many places just in California alone, but I'd really eventually like to see the world from a bike.
Yeah, it's a pretty lofty goal. That'll be good though.
Yeah. Well, one place at a time.
Sure. You'll get there.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming and thanks for joining me on the podcast. It was fun.
Well, thanks for having me.
Sure, anytime.
I mean, I can be a return guest anytime.
Stop talking.
Maybe even like a semi-permanent.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, everybody, sit back and relax. It's time for some R&R.
Today on Ron's Rant, we're going to be talking about the ridiculous term junk miles. What are junk miles? Junk miles are when a cyclist deems a ride to be not worthy of his training regiment or the way he rides his bike. I think it's asinine. It should be stricken from your vocabulary. If you ride a bike, you should never say the term junk miles. It's a little bit douchey and doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Isn't the point of riding a bike to get on it and ride it? Does it really matter how far you go? I don't think it does. I use my bike more now for transportation than I ever have. I don't race. I'm not out beating my last Strava. PRs are pretty fun, but there's no such thing as junk miles. I mean, go out there and ride your bike. Just have fun. We've all done it when we were little. You remember when you used to get on your bike and you would just go and go and go? Were those junk miles? No, they weren't. So let's digress a little bit and talk about where that term might have come from. I believe it's coming from the shitty race culture that the bicycle industry is constantly pushing down our throat. Oh, you have to go fast. You know, you have to make your rides count. You can't just go out and have fun. You surely can't not clip in. You surely can't ride without Lycra. Oh, you're in plain clothes? Oh, then you must not be very serious as a cyclist. It's that kind of talk that's kind of bullshit. And it's that kind of attitude, that kind of race mentality that alienates possible new riders. Our job as ambassadors of the sport when we're on our bike is to be inclusive, to grow the sport. That's kind of our job. And I would love for anybody, I don't care who you are, I don't care how fast you are, I don't care if you're a Cat 1 road racer, I would love for someone to sit down in front of me and explain to me what a junk mile is. And explain to me how any time you get on your bike, if it's not exactly the right kind of training regimen, that it's a waste of time. So you're telling me that when I get on my bike and I ride 6 miles to run some errands, that that's junk miles? I don't think so. That's called one less car on the road. Grant Peterson once said that bicycles are rideable art that, if given the chance, could possibly save the world. I believe that. And something as important as the bicycle to both your mental health and physical and to the well-being of the planet, anytime you get on one, it's never a waste of time. So throw the term junk miles out of your vocabulary, kind of pull your head out of your ass, and let's just ride our bikes together.
Okay, well that's it. That's all we got. Thanks again for coming by and joining us for another episode of Declaration of Free Will. Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and also follow us on Twitter at Ride Your Bike, Facebook at Declaration of Free Will, and Instagram at DFW_RFrizzell. Okay, get out and ride your bike more. See you next time. Bye.